You're listening to War for Idiots, a podcast by idiots for idiots.
God, I love that voice. Dude. I don't know who she is. Voice of an angel.
Oh, mate, I do. Voice of a person.
Voice of an angel person.
Angel.
Angel-y.
You don't have to deal with the talent. That's the problem. Like, I have to manage the talent.
I love how you use the word talent in this show.
Well, mate, but that's the only person on this show we can use the word talent in reference to.
That's very true. That's very true. All right.
I think we're live on stage.
I'm not seeing it live yet.
Yeah, it's definitely live because it's on Facebook. Okay. Someone's put it on Facebook already.
It was me. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, those people from all around the world, that's you listening, and you too, Shane. Podcast listeners from all around the world. I don't know anyone named Shane. Hello.
Welcome back.
I don't know Shane's, except for the one I'm talking to now. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of War for Idiots. We are your hosts. I am Rich, the jobber now.
And I am Mick, the ninny hammer.
Those are some great words. Awesome. Those are some great ancient words that describe idiocy that I found through my extensive research in Google. And we are indeed the idiots that you have been looking for. And today we are doing another movie review. We are reviewing the Spike Lee brand new movie on Netflix called Da Five Bloods. The Five Bloods. And this is going to be a cracker of an interview because we already
You say cracker of an interview? Is that an attack against me? You calling me a cracker?
All right, dude, start it again.
Inappropriate from the start.
But welcome back to another episode, ladies and gents. And thank you for your ongoing support. We are well past halfway through season two. And the show... This is the three quarter mark, and the show keeps on growing and growing and growing. And the reason for that is because people just like you who listen to it, who comment on it, who provide us feedback, give us advice, tell us how much you hate us, but you keep on listening and spreading the word. So thank you very much.
Those people for doing who that. Are like, oh, Mick puts on this fake abrasiveness.
Now listen,
I'm just a prick.
The people who think that Mick Cook fakes abrasiveness, you are giving him way too much credit. That you can't fake that abrasiveness.
And clearly haven't met me.
That's like saying that that grater has like fake sharp edges. No, it's really that sharp. It is really that sharp. Yeah. All right. So
we done?
So we're done. I just can't get my YouTube to work. I don't know why it's just being a bit silly. Have you got it live?
Yeah, I got live. I'm on the chat. I'm the only one on the chat. We've only got one person watching. Gee, what's happening tonight?
Might just be you. They come on eventually. Listeners, we are going to review this movie, Da Five Bloods. It is a very, very new movie by Spike Lee. It is a very controversial and polarizing movie, like most things that we talk about. And get ready because we are very excited because it's, to be honest with you, this movie has really forced us to think about things that probably make us a bit uncomfortable, things that we wouldn't, things that don't easily roll off the tongue. It's not your sort of military history. It's not your military theory. It's certainly about war, which is good or else we wouldn't be on this podcast, but it explores many, many other topics of which we've had to really explore how we feel about those before addressing them today. So I'm really excited about doing it, Mick.
Stuff that's well outside our experience level.
Yeah. Well put. But before we kick off, mate, how are you? How is your COVID? How is that luscious beard going?
Mate, so the beard's had a trim.
Yep.
Hair had a trim because I have to go to a stakeholder meeting and do a bit of a pitch. And I'll tell you what, as most of the viewers, the listeners may not know, but I definitely was in no physical state to leave the house over the past 3 to 4 months, but I'm going pretty well. I do want to say and give a shout out to all of the people in Australia who are doing the right thing with COVID. So this is Western Australia, Northern Territory, South Australia, Queensland, New South Wales, not you, Tasmania.
I saw that. That's really funny.
Thanks, Victoria. Keeping it real, I guess. I feel sorry for everyone in Victoria. You are going through it tough. So we know that it is tough, but I do encourage anyone out there just to wear a mask because it prevents 5G facial recognition software.
Oh, man. So much controversy gets talked about on this show.
That's just to get our viewers up. I care about Victoria, obviously, but, you know.
Josh, stakeholder meeting spelled M-E-A-T-I-N-G, a classic, dad pun. Well done, Josh.
Josh is actually a young dad, so he doesn't sleep much at all.
He has just proven it.
What about yourself, mate? How's your COVID going?
COVID's going well. You know, everything is tracking along. Everything's same old. Everyone's healthy. You know, we're hoarding toilet paper, as everyone should be doing, and we're just living our lives, man. Every Saturday, I get a call from my beautiful mother, who's probably the first person that listens to the episode as soon as it's released. She gets very excited about it. And she always talks about the bald and the bearded. She is in love with that concept, so I have to mention that. She also, and I know I'm opening a can of worms here, she also said, tell Mick to stop interrupting you. So... And I say to her, as soon as I mention that, he's going to double down on it. So here we go.
I mean, her preference would be for this to be a solo show of you. Right?
big time.
We've already got one of those. So you know what? Yeah. We've got a show each. And in this one, we get to talk together.
That's it. All right. Let's get into this review. But before we do, let us talk about one of our good sponsors, Good To Go Gear, G2G. Good To Go Gear is an Australian veteran-owned business that has been supporting its customers for well over a decade. Whether you are into your military, your camping, your adventure, your workwear, or your first aid, they have such a huge wide range that is ready to be shipped directly to you. Now, that range is changing. It's expanding. What you can do is go check out their catalog at www.goodtogogear.com.au and get the best gear that is G2G. They also offer a 30-day 100% satisfaction guarantee and ship both to Australia and the US of A. So what are you waiting for? Get out there, check out what they got at Good To Go Gear, because their gear is Good To Go Gear that is truly G2G. Now, very, very exciting about our sponsors at Good To Go Gear. They have just released a brand new belt called the Cobra Belt. Let me show it to you. I'm wearing it right now.
You're wearing it. So I'm doing an unboxing. So if I had Instagram and a whole heap of, well, I've got a tripod on the other side of the desk, but I'm going to... there we go.
So it's
not going to stand up and put it on though, because then everyone will see how fat I've gotten. But,
so it's one of those military style. I would describe it as it's a belt that once it's clipped in, it unclips exceptionally easy with the use of two fingers. But to come undone without the use of those fingers would take a mammoth effort. So it is an awesome belt.
You can go camping. Latch here, like pretend the straps in there.
Yeah, I'm going camping next week, and this is going to be the stuff that I hang all my camping accoutrement off. So I'm very much looking forward to it. So it's called a Cobra Buckle.
Be the best kitted out reservist out there.
It's called a Cobra Buckle G2G Tactical Belt. You can find it on their website. And the exciting part about it for us is they're having a War for Idiots special sale for the Cobra Belt. So for our listeners that hear the show and go to the website, go on there, look up the Cobra Buckle G2G Tactical Belt. And for a limited time, you can get roughly 30% off. So regular retail price is $55, but they are selling it to our good listeners for $40. Now, when this thing comes out, there are some shops that have already agreed to stock them. They will be charging $80 for them, and so they should. But for our amazing listeners, check out the War for Idiots special that you can find at Good To Go Gear. Get yourself one of these belts. And you know what? I challenge you to try to unbuckle it. You're gonna love this thing.
That's why I unbuckled it off camera. I mean,
unbuckle it without using your fingers. Yeah. Like it is, there's numbers on it. I think it's like a 12 ton, like it's got 12 tons or something written on it.
12 kilonewtons. Holy
shit. As well as G2G. And it's good to go, man. It is good to go. Legit.
It's good. I like it. If you jump on the YouTube channel, you can see the link in the live comments there. If you jump on our show notes, on any of your podcast things, you should be able to see the link in your show notes for that special as well. It'll just be WFIG2G special. Jump on there and grab it, because you're not going to get these belts this cheap, and you're not going to get any belt better than this one at that price. No. So just do it.
Just do it, indeed. All right.
That could be their that could be their motto. Just.
Okay. Well, we're talking about that.
Like, I'm sure even if it costs you everything, just do it.
All right. So let's talk about Da Five Bloods. So what is Da Five Bloods?
The Five Bloods.
Da Five Bloods is a 2020 American war drama directed by Spike Lee. It has a wide range of actors. I won't go through all of them. But the film's plot follows a group of aging Vietnam War veterans who return to the country in search of the remains of their fallen squad leader, as well as the treasure they buried whilst serving there. That's what Wikipedia has to say about it. And when you look it up on IMDb, they give you a quick summary. Four African-American vets battle the forces of man and nature when they return to Vietnam, seeking the remains of their fallen squad leader and the gold fortune.
I get the nature bit, though. Right. There's not really that much nature. That's
Well, it depends on how you define nature.
And we probably should say spoiler alert, because to discuss this movie, it's going to be really hard to avoid spoilers, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Spoiler alert, if you're going to watch it, and I think you should watch it, just because we'd love to hear what you thought of it.
Big time.
Just, yeah, spoiler alert. And
so have you heard of this movie? Stop interrupting. Have you heard of this movie before I forced you to watch it?
What was that?
Have you heard of this before?
So it'd come up on my Netflix recommendations. So I had a read of it. And actually, I was going to say I was tripping. I thought it, because of the use of the term Bloods, I thought it would be bouncing between Vietnam and their lives in gang conflict. Because I thought it was related to the Bloods and Crips type thing. But no, it wasn't.
It was not about that.
So I hadn't actually watched it. But as you know, like, I only watch war films for this show. I don't watch war films outside this show. Not sure I would classify this specifically as a war film, but
it's a film that has aspects of war in it.
Yeah, that's right. But because they'd classified as a war film on Netflix, I was just like, I'm not really interested. So I'm glad you selected it. Oh, we make all our the show, by the way.
I don't remember how I stumbled across it. I was listening to another podcast, obviously not one as good as this one, or something along the lines of that, and it came up as a as something that people are interested in because of the Black Lives Matter movement that's happening at the moment. I'm familiar with Spike Lee. We'll go to that in a minute. And that's sort of how I heard about it. I heard, a new movie by Spike Lee, incredibly well-timed because of what's happening around the world. And I thought, hey, let's, and before we, you know, we advertised that we're going to review the movie before we both watched the movie. So we kind of just went in 2 feet in and just went from there. And we were both very surprised about what we saw.
I only find out what movie we're reviewing by looking at the Wednesday ad on Facebook.
That's true.
Having to watch it on the Thursday night.
That's very true. That's very true.
Not because Richie doesn't tell me, just because I'm just not very good at preparing.
at all. It is a very, very new movie. So it was shot in 2019, released in June this year. So it was going to have a massive cinematic release when the movie was made. It was going to compete with Wonder Woman, and it was going to compete with another movie that I can't remember off the top of my head. Might have been the Bond movie. Obviously COVID hit, so it went straight to Netflix, which is where it was going to end up eventually, but it went there first instead. And we wanted to tackle it because it just felt like this is the right time to talk about this movie.
And the lack of a cinematic release for a Spike Lee film means that it's automatically going to miss a lot of the people that would see it by, they wouldn't be devoted Spike Lee fans, but they would have gone to the cinema to see a Spike Lee film.
Because
steady moviegoers. So I think it's worth discussing just on that alone.
Big time.
I think we did one of the films in our undergrad. I can't remember which one it was, but we certainly did.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to get into that. I remembered it, and I'm going to get into it.
Oh, you got it?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. So we wanted to do this movie because it just felt like a really good topic that involves war, which is what we like to talk about, and very attuned to what's happening around the world at the moment. Because to be frank, Black Lives Matter.
Just be rich.
To be frank, Rich and Mick, Black Lives Matter, the protest, the animosity, the stuff that's happening around the world, we don't understand it. I'm not here to say that I completely understand what's happening. I understand what's happening, but I don't understand all sides of it. You know what I mean?
And actually, so we can sympathize, but we certainly can't empathize.
Exactly. You know, so
completely supportive of the Black Lives Matter movement. I am completely supportive. Yeah. And the Indigenous one here in Australia, and as Rich knows, that, you know, I tend to do a marches with for Indigenous causes here in Australia. But you know, it's not my experience, so there's always going to be a gap. Same for yourself. It's not your experience, so there's going to be a gap between understanding it and being able to sympathise with it.
And so this movie presented an opportunity. It is advertised. It is Spike Lee, and he's saying, "Hey, how many war movies have you seen through the eyes of a Black man? None, right?" And he goes, "Well, this is one of them." Okay, cool. Well, I mean, here we go.
I mean, yeah, and, that's an interesting point.
And so I was just like, I'm in. And that's what got us to this movie. So let's talk about Spike Lee. And Mick mentioned it before that we, Mick and I, studied, which is a surprise, but we studied a movie of his during our undergrad days.
You wouldn't watch our show and think that we studied film.
I know, right? So that movie was a small production called Do the Right Thing. Yep. Okay. So Do the Right Thing. It was a very powerful movie for myself when I was young. I remember spending a lot of time watching it. You got to remember the internet wasn't around back then, or wasn't around as popular. So you couldn't really read too far and wide about it. So, and we're pretty young as we're going through it, but I remember it being pretty impacted by this movie. So let me just read what it says about it. So the film was a critical and commercial success and received numerous accolades, including an Academy Award nomination for Best Original Screenplay and Best Supporting Actor for Aelio's portrayal of Sal, the pizzeria owner. It is often listed among the greatest films of all time. And in 1999, the film was deemed culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress in its first year of eligibility, and was selected for preservation in the National Film Registry. So this was a big deal that Spike Lee made this film. He was a young director. He'd done a couple of films before this, but this is the one that really launched him into the stratosphere. And it was released in 1989. But when you read about what the movie is about, it slapped me in the face what the movie is about in 2020. Let me just go through the highlights because I didn't remember any of this. I mean, we studied this film 2 decades ago, right? Let me just quickly go through the plot. And again, spoiler alerts, I'm going to tell you what happens in the movie because I think it's poignant to where we're getting to tonight. So it is about a American neighborhood, predominantly Black. There's a pizzeria shop that's in the middle of this neighborhood and everything's going fine, but there's an altercation between the pizzeria owner, Sal, and some of the young Black men in it. The altercation turns violent and the police arrive. The police take one of the young Black teenagers in a chokehold, and during this altercation, the police accidentally kill one of the young Black men in a chokehold. Based off this, he dies, as I said, and riots and violence ensue. And then the movie sort of spirals into that. It is, I couldn't believe it when I was just like, oh my God, this is...
How prescient.
Crazy, right? Crazy. And then I became obsessed again with this movie as I was 20 years ago, but I'd forgotten I was obsessed about it. So I did so much reading about do the right thing. And obviously, Spike Lee has had a lot of attention as a result of what's happened with George Floyd and Do the Right Thing. And here's the cool, here's the cool thing. That's a terrible thing. Here is the thing that Spike Lee says about it. He goes, Do the Right Thing. This is not the start of the journey. Do the Right Thing was about a young Black man that was choked, accidentally and died by police. And this is what happened. George Floyd was quoting another black man after this movie had came out who was choked by police and had died. So this is, you know, this is George Floyd was certainly not the first. He was not the first. He was not the second. He was a string of many that has occurred. And it just blew me away when I read the synopsis of this movie.
When we watched this 20 years ago.
Yes.
The death of the black man. Absolutely. Would have actually been, we probably would have assessed that as a necessary plot trigger. As opposed, you know, sad, but, you know, at the time, just like, you know, for us, it was an extreme element in a film to drive the narrative forward.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
actually, yeah, it was the recounting of a common, you know, and I say exactly. Common, because what we're seeing now, exactly. sort of occurrence. But interestingly enough, I saw a clip from the Golden Girls the other day. You remember the Golden Girls?
Yeah. I can't wait to hear where this goes. Yes.
So Blanche, he's talking with Don Cheadle, who's, I think he's African-American. I'm not sure if he's British or African-American. He's an African-American actor. Well, he's definitely got an American accent, so I'm going to say African-American. And they're discussing her putting up the Confederacy flag.
Wow, interesting.
And the argument about that. And now I know a lot of listeners here might track us on social media and that, and there's a lot of people that we interact with in the US that are in the discussions over the Confederate statues. The UK, all the slavery statues got pulled down and... Confederate flags now banned from NASCAR, all that. And I'll tell you what, this is, you know, Golden Girls must be 20, 30, 40 years ago, 30, yeah. 30 at least. Yeah. The conversation between Don Cheadle and Blanche Devereaux are the same ones we're seeing commentators make on CNN and you know, and the opposite opinions appearing, you know, in places like Fox and stuff. And I was just like, you know, if you, no one would ever have called the Golden Girls a crystal ball, right?
Absolutely. No,
I think the shtick of the show was the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like it's
great, and this is stuff that we don't really have culturally,
no,
but Australia's got a legacy that is misunderstood in the same way. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes here in Australia with the influence.
It's a great point. You know, Black Lives Matter. Around the world, everyone having their protest, their version of the protest, just like we are here in Australia.
Yeah.
It's not the start. It's not the the protest started in 2020. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as you said, with the Confederate flag, that you sort of 30 years ago, they're having the same argument. This movie was released 20 years ago. It is depicting exactly what happened two decades later. Like, this is not the start of the conversation. It's a conversation that's been had for a very, very long time.
And we're new to it, man.
Yes, that's right. But who are not new to it are the people that it's affected, obviously. Yeah. And I think even just how long we have been talking about it versus how long they have been living it, that inability to compute, that misalignment, that could be one of the very fundamental starts of why there's so many polarizing opinions about it going around the world. So.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that really grinds my gears, I think it grinds everyone's gears, is the All Lives Matter movement. Like, people don't understand, no one's saying Black Lives Matter only.
Yeah.
But that's where the crisis is.
Yeah.
You know, someone said maybe they should just put also at the end of it. I'm like, I don't think so. Like it, you just because you failed English at school.
It's, I didn't even want to get into that.
But they were going to stir some people up. Anyway.
Definitely. All right. So look,
Spike Lee stuff. Hey?
So when this movie came out, it was a very polarizing film. Okay. So many claimed that it would incite riots, that would incite violence within the black community. And it did. Here we are 20 years later. Right. But the movie is 30 years old now. It had a cinematic 30 year release only a couple of years ago. But that's where this sort of Spike Lee, that's where we got introduced to this director. Yeah. Now, Spike Lee since then has released a suite of movies for the last 30 years. He's a long working director. He's pretty old. And to be frank, his movies haven't been what you would classify your classic Hollywood successes. Okay, I think Spike would agree. Everyone knows who he is.
I don't think Damon's that busy.
Well, no, that's a really good point. But he did have a bit of a resurgence, if you will, in the movie Black Klansman, which came out a couple of years ago. Black Klansman is a story about Ron Stallworth, who is the first African-American detective to serve in the Colorado Springs Police Department. Determined to make a name for himself, Stallworth bravely sets out on a dangerous mission, infiltrate and expose the Ku Klux Klan. It won an Academy Award for Best Adapted Screenplay. It's based on true events, and it's got that dude from Star Wars in it. But I haven't seen it. You have seen it, and you said it's an amazing movie.
It is brilliant. I mean, the dude from Star Wars was like a supporting character.
Like I say, he's not the main guy in the movie.
An African American is the main guy. I actually think he has to get. He uses Adam Driver, the guy from Star Wars, as who does a lot of great veteran initiatives because he's a former Marine, but they use him. They had to use him as like the white guy because, long story short, a African American cop joins the Ku Klux Klan over the phone.
Yeah. You see that in the ads for it.
So it's an amazing film. I saw it when it came out in 2018 at the cinema, and with the voice talent from the start of the show, who is a film and media academic. So blown away. I was just like,
pfft. Yeah, cool. Well, I'm definitely going to watch it. Look, it's just been a bit of a resurgence for Spike Lee. You know, it's currently 96% of Rotten Tomatoes, an extremely high score on IMDb, 7.5 out of 10. So it's a highly rated movie. Yeah. I saw you went to interrupt me then and then you stopped yourself. Well done.
No, I was just showing you what I was like in the cinema. That's what I was doing in the cinema.
But if you want to watch a bit more about Spike Lee, that's certainly another good place.
Definitely watch it. Well. Watch Black Klansman. It is a fascinating film and it will raise the same issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about the background of this movie. So this film was
multiple backgrounds. Like sometimes it's jungle. Sometimes it's like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes it's the backgrounds that we have behind us right now. But this film was originally a script that was released in 2013 and written to be directed by one Oliver Stone. Oh, that's very good. Well done, mate. Well done.
You're
very
cool.
Of course, Oliver Stone, most famous from a war movie perspective for his direction. Do you call it direction when a director does something? The direction for his directing of the movie Platoon.
I think the most famous war film is Alexander.
Yeah, that's true. But I think it's safe to say that if this movie had originally gone to Oliver Stone as it was planned, it would have taken a very, very different direction.
He would have completely fucked it.
So there is a great article that I stumbled across.
You couldn't have a white director of this film.
Well, here's the thing, right? So this film was not about black soldiers in Vietnam at all. So when it was first written, so in 2013, was all about a bunch of white soldiers going back to get their squad leader and also the gold. And that was what the movie was about. And then the script got into the hands of Spike Lee and his offsider, Willett, I believe, it's the guy that helped him write Black Klansman. And together they were like, let's do this from a black man's perspective. And then they added a whole bunch of stuff into it and you get what you get.
That's good because it would have just been any other Vietnam movie.
Exactly, right? So if Oliver Stone, it would have just been any other Vietnam movie and it wasn't, and it certainly was not.
And those elements, the two bits you mentioned there, the finding, you know, those actually, the gold and the squad leader, that's actually, no, they're plot drivers, but they're not the most pivotal moments, I don't think.
It's like they're the covers of the book, you know. They could have not done any of that and still the movie would have been pretty significant in my opinion. So, but look, if you want to read a lot about it, probably the best article I've come across is on vulture.com that speaks about Spike Lee's Defy Bloods. Talks about the whole background and all that sorts of stuff. And as we said before, Lee wanted to make a war movie from a black perspective. Now, here's the thing. He has made a war movie before from a black perspective. Oh. It is a little known war movie called Miracle at St. Anna. So Miracle at St. Anna is a 2008 American-Italian epic war film directed by Spike Lee based on a novel of 2003 of the same name. It's set primarily in Italy and it tells the story of young black GIs serving in Italy fighting in World War II. This movie bombed. This movie bombed incredibly, incredibly hard. All right.
Really?
It had a $45 million budget. It grossed $9 million worldwide. It received terrible reviews from everywhere. It currently sits at 33% certified rotten on Rotten Tomatoes with a weighted average of 5.2 out of 10. A lot of the complaints about it, though, are about the editing. The editing is just a mess. People didn't really like it. I haven't seen it. And there was a lot of controversy that I read about the inaccuracies of the movie from an Italian perspective. The Italians were not very happy about how they were portrayed as a nation in World War II.
For starters, pick a side.
Well, yeah, you kind of made your bed with that one a little bit.
That's right. It's like Germany criticizing how they're portrayed in, you know, Saving Private Ryan.
But this movie is different, right? So from Spike Lee about this movie, this is a quote from him. The black GIs in Vietnam heard about Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination in 1968. And they heard about what their sisters and brothers were doing back in the United States, where 100 cities were burning. Shit was about to go off. And those soldiers wouldn't have been shooting the Viet Cong either, says Lee. But that dynamic wasn't new. It was there in Miracle at St. Anna. It was in Glory. These are movies. It's why this movie mentions Crispus Attucks, first American race to Atticus.
Yeah, first American to die in the Revolutionary War. Yeah.
I mean, this year, my brother, and he goes on and on and on about what is important about this movie that he had made. So that was our background. That was our introduction to the movie before I certainly started watching it. I'm not sure if you had done any, if you'd done any research or reading before you watched the movie. It's classic. Well, classic, Rich.
Dude, I totally did. but that being said, I've read a lot about certain units the US have had. So, you know, a great book by a friend of the show, friend of Depression, Max Brooks. He wrote World War Z. Written a new book. It's been released called Devolution. He wrote a graphic novel called The Harlem Hellfighters about the first African-American unit that fought Western Front. And, mate, the day that gets made into a movie, I am there. It's
absolutely brilliant.
Graphic novel. So it's interesting to actually see these perspectives because, you know, as we've said, this is like, you know, there's no cultural reference point for us on this.
No, that's right. All right. So let's talk about watching the movie. Before we do, let us just throw a whole bunch of love at our good sponsors.
Did you see the Facebook thing about this?
Yes, Extra Specialists Group. Now, since 2017, the Extra Specialists have been connecting Australian veterans to the entertainment industry. Through their consultancy, agency, productions and training, Extra Specialists have been changing the face of television and movies and putting those who have served onto the big screen and into your homes. They've worked with everyone.
Would be in your homes.
They've worked with the big names, Marvel, Touchstone, Netflix, Stan, and much more. Extra Specialists is the place to go if you want to get into the industry or if you just want to have fun. Mick mentioned it before. We put up a video of recent training that they did.
Holy.
It looks proper fun. Giant warehouse, weapons, action, lights, just doing stunts.
Next time in Queensland.
They're opening their borders. We could go there for the holidays and go do some training with them. That'd be awesome.
I'm going to teach the family. I'm going to go live there.
So if you have extra specialist skills or you want to learn some, then reach out to the guys at Extra Specialist Group and sign up and get started now. Check out their website. Go to www.extraspecialist.com. We reviewed a war movie that they made, Danger Close, helped make Danger Close. They're doing some really, really cool things in industry. And if you've got skills, if you're a veteran, they will hook you up. And if you are not a veteran, I'm sorry to say, no, I'm joking. They're going to hook you up as well. They do awesome training for everyone. They get people in the industry, gun safety courses, explosives, all that sorts of stuff that, you know, it sounds cool because it is cool. Hit them up. Extra Specialist is where you're going to get that stuff from.
And I think first responders are also pretty big for them too, right?
Yeah, there you go.
I think, I could be full of it, but check it out. There's also the links going up in the YouTube comments as I speak as well, so make sure you jump on YouTube, find them there. And I don't have anything else to say except they're going to make me a movie star.
Alright, so watching the movie.
Hey Mick, we need a bearded guy. I just hear that, Rich.
So the movie starts the movie starts with the famous Muhammad Ali and his objection to the Vietnam War. And, you know, within the context of all these Vietnam War movies, Mick, I don't know about you, but you almost forget, right, that Muhammad Ali, this amazingly famous boxer, this icon, that how much he objected to the actual war.
He went to jail, man.
Right. So the first thing we hear now, I want to read a quote that he says during this movie. He says the N-word in this movie. I'm not going to say it. I'm just going to say N-word. So I just want to get that out
there. Out of the two of us, you could probably get away with it more than I could.
Just not going to say it. Okay.
And that's actually the right choice, ladies and gentlemen, even if you're singing along to a rap song.
Yeah, I'm just not going to say it. So the first thing we hear is Muhammad Ali's reasoning for refusing to acquiesce to the draft. And this is him. My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud, Ali said. And he goes on. And shoot them for what? They never called me N-word. They never lynched me. They didn't put no dogs on me. Never robbed me of my nationality. Ali stated this in 1978, years after the war ended. So it starts off with Muhammad Ali and his objection to the Vietnam War. Yeah. And it's quite powerful because those words that he said, I was actually really struck with them. I can't relate to them, but I was just like, it's bringing up some really interesting points.
And he threw away his world championship.
Say again.
He threw away his world championship to go to jail. Right.
So I'm going to read this quote. Why should they ask, this is from Muhammad Ali. Why should they ask me
the most famous quote?
Put a uniform and go 10,000 miles from home and drop bombs and bullets on brown people in Vietnam, while so-called Negro people in Louisville are treated like dogs and denied simple human rights. No, I'm not going 10,000 miles from home to help murder and burn another poor nation simply to continue the domination of white slave masters of the darker people the world over. This is the day which such evils must come to an end. I have been warned that to take such a stand would cost me millions of dollars, but I've said it once and I will say it again. The real enemy of my people is here. I will not disgrace my religion, my people, or myself by becoming a tool to enslave those who are fighting for their own justice, freedom, and equality. If I thought the war was going to bring freedom and equality to 22 million of my people, they wouldn't have to draft me. I'd join tomorrow. I have nothing to lose by standing up for my beliefs. So I'll go to jail. So what? We've been in jail for 400 years. I literally have got a shiver down my spine. I've literally went goosebumpy reading that quote. It is just, it's just grabbing at so many things, so many things.
Yeah, pretty coherent, right? Like everyone remembers Ali, the cocky spinster, or they remember the Will Smith portrayal, or they remember, him with his Parkinson's. And what they forget is this period, that I guess a lot of people, like us, tried to keep out of the news, He was someone who had influence and chose to use it for a positive impact.
To make a hard decision. Now, what people are going to, like, you could say, oh, okay, he didn't want to go because he was scared. Man, as the world heavyweight champion, I guarantee you getting in that ring with some of those people that he fought.
Got the ring with George Foreman, mate.
Yeah. That's scary. So I think we can throw straight away that he was scared of going to war out the window. That's not a thing.
Number of people who die boxing every year, still quite high.
Exactly. But he was making a stand, and the stand was so powerful. And the stand, I mean, the words he's saying, and here's the thing that hits me again, and we spoke about this already, the words he's saying aren't frozen in 1960, aren't frozen in 1970. From what we're, from what we're hearing, these words are as relevant today as they are, 40, 50, 60 years ago. It was just striking. And when the movie starts with this, immediately, right, the vibe of this movie is not a normal Vietnam movie. Immediately, you're like, okay, where is this movie going? Now, what follows this Ali quote is a litany of absolutely horrific footage from the Vietnam War, but not just from the Vietnam War. And here's the thing, the vast majority of the horror that you're seeing is the context around the Vietnam War. And Spike Lee is shocking you with what the world is experiencing because of the Vietnam War, not just in the Vietnam War. It's the absolute opposite of
Vietnam War.
It's the absolute opposite of the start of every single war movie I've ever seen. Like, think about it, right? Every single war movie you've seen, okay, Charlie Sheen walking through the bush, Defoe comes and says, oh, you know, if you want to carry these books out, okay, the start of the adventure. Yeah, right.
Closest you have to a similar vein in terms of Vietnam.
Yes.
Anti-Vietnam film, right?
Yeah, but this one is something different. He is showing you this war from a very, very different perspective, and he's shocking you, right? And he's reminding you that the Vietnam War was a different war. The Vietnam War was the first war that everyone saw happening in real time. Film, television, color television. These were the images that were around the Vietnam War. And you see them and they are striking. They're absolutely striking. And this imagery, Mick, you remember what episode? I think it was the nuclear episode. I was reading and writing and getting ready for the show, and I texted you and I got myself in a real depressive spiral.
Amen.
Happened again. As I decided to do some Googling around all the imagery at the start of this movie.
Mate, if that happens.
It was really bad. But I think it's worth talking about because there's some imagery that is striking.
Let's get some vicarious trauma counseling happening now.
The first image is, of course, that image of the young naked girl. I think she was 8 or 9, running away from a napalm attack in Vietnam.
She's still alive now.
Burning skin, right? The photo was called Napalm Girl. And it's a woman called Phan Thi Kim Phuc. She went on to live. She migrated to Canada. She had a litany of surgeries as a result of the skin grafts that she required for third-degree burns as a result of South Vietnamese napalm. And the photo is incredibly well-known. It won a Pulitzer Prize for what it captured, and it just captured the absolute horrors of the Vietnam War. Horrific, horrific, horrific photo, horrific, horrific, horrific footage. The next one, the execution of Nguyen Van Lem. This one, everyone must have seen this one. This is the one.
Extra context to this one too.
Yeah. This is one where the exact second a bullet is entering this young man's head is captured by a camera, and then the footage is shown. And the footage is graphic. I won't go into it, but my wife literally, she had never seen it before, clung to me and was just like, what is happening? Why am I seeing this? We were both shocked.
We've seen it a fair bit through studies and stuff, I imagine, but I wonder how many people haven't seen it before.
Because
you know, he's being executed by a brigadier, I think it is, in the intelligence or security of South Vietnamese, you got the details in the show notes.
you're right. So it's famous. So the some of the context about it is it's a man in uniform executing a man out of uniform. It looks like he's committing a war crime, and he is. And it's brigadier who is executing this other gentleman who is a VC, I think brigadier as well, who. Many people are saying that he would deserve to die because he had just, before that, he had been brought to general because he had just killed a whole bunch of women and children and all that sorts of stuff. But
the general's family was also killed. This was during the Tet Offensive?
It was during the Tet Offensive, yeah. And look, the general that did the shooting would go on to be charged with the war crime because it is a war crime. It's a unsanctioned killing. But the footage is just striking. And you hit the nail on the head, mate. When my wife watched it, she literally cringed and was just like, what is happening? Why are we watching this? And she was saying, this should come with a warning. This should come with a warning that this is what you're about to see. Because when you watch a war movie, you can almost, you know, you're almost like, hey, it's fake. That's an actor, etc. But this is it happening right now. And then the last one, and I don't want to, I'm getting depressed talking about this. I don't want to focus on it too much, but it's a famous image, one that I have known for my entire childhood or my entire life. And that is the Burning Monk, known as the Thich Quang Duc. It is a monk who on a busy Saigon road on the 11th of June, 1963, set himself on fire in protest of the persecution of monks by the South Vietnamese, the Diem government at the time. Famous to me because it is the cover of a Rage Against the Machine album, their first album, if you will. And very much what Rage Against the Machine are all about, which is raging against the machine. So this is just three of the many, many horrific things that Spike Lee is punching through to you. Let's start off with Ali protesting against the war and then just shocking you with these images. And when my wife was saying, why is he doing this? I was just like, why is he doing this? Why is he doing this? And I think he's doing this for a very simple reason.
He wasn't the only one. There's quite a number of them, but yeah.
He's letting you know that war is horrible. You know what I mean?
This is what kicked off the, it's not the causal factor, but the Arab Spring was a fruit vendor setting himself on fire on the steps of a municipal building.
You can do a whole episode on the monks setting themselves on fire. Absolutely. And it's crazy. It's crazy horrific. This is how Spike Lee introduces the movie. And immediately you realize this is not going to be a normal war movie immediately. Right. He is going to make a point about this movie. And you know what? He had my attention. I must say, I was like, okay, I'm uncomfortable. My guard is up, but I kind of want to see what's next. I'm ready to go, Spike. Where are you taking me on this journey? And then the movie starts from there. But it is a graphic start to a movie, I must say.
Yeah.
And then from there, the adventure starts. And the movie gets really confused. Spoiler alert. It gets super, super, super confused.
Yeah. And it, like, there's an adventure film in the middle of it.
Right. So what you have is a mix. You have a mix of a story. Not Mick.
Combination.
Something interesting. So a mix. You have a mixture of a story, which is the Vietnam one. You have a mixture of an education. So Spike Lee is trying to educate you.
Yep.
And it's about an education about Black history.
Successfully, right? Educates.
But the problem is, the two do not mix well together in this movie. They could, I believe, but they don't. You are
studio said you must keep the lame adventure parts of this film.
Yes, right. I'm not a filmmaker, but to me it seems like the editing was really off in this movie. The movie was that Lee, he was trying to, it was almost like he was trying to keep the movie afloat, but he was also trying to educate you about Black history in the Vietnam War, and he was trying to say, look, they're both equally important, but I'm not going to segue between them. I'm just going to go this one, then that one, then this one, then that one. And to be honest with you, what was the outcome? Well, I learned a lot about Black history and the Black perspective on the Vietnam War, no doubt about it. But I did not enjoy the story whatsoever. I did not enjoy it. I thought the story was shallow. I thought the story was predictable, and I didn't really enjoy it. Okay. And I'll give you an example. So in it, okay, they talk about, and they make a lot of fun of a lot of movies in here, and they start making fun of Rambo. Rambo is this big hero, and they're talking about all these white people are coming back. They do these movies about coming back to Vietnam, and they're trying to win the war after the war's over. It was just kind of like what the line they say. And then they say they should talk about one of our bloods, like Milton Olive, all right?
Yeah.
Who's Milton Olive? Milton Olive, so Norm in the movie, Milton Olive, excuse me. Oh my God, I've lost myself.
He's bloke who jumped on a grenade and got Medal of Honor. Done.
Yeah, so Milton Olive, here we go.
I gave all the information that's needed.
Norm describes Hollywood trying to get back and win the Vietnam War. Otis says they should make a movie about one of their own. And they talk about Olive. Olive, who was killed when he was 18 in 1965 for falling on a grenade to protect the members of his platoon. He was
foreshadowing.
He was posthumously received the Medal of Honor for his actions. Okay, so you get them talking about Rambo war movie. Cool. They go, they should talk about this blood called Milton Olive. You're like, oh, who's Milton Olive? Education part. They then flick to a picture of him. Then the movie becomes a documentary. Okay. They just go, he did this, he did this, he did this. Bang, back to the movie again. You know what I mean?
I liked that.
But
I didn't like the predictable, clumsy story.
Terrible setups. I liked it. As I said, I liked the learning aspect of it, and I learned about Milton Olive.
You didn't like the editing of it.
But I didn't like the editing of it. I was just like, the story keeps getting interrupted by what you're trying to do. And I feel like he could have done the same, but just with a bit more nuance in his editing. He could have
done a scene. Recreated the scene.
Yes.
He does that. Like, you know how he jumps in and out of time. One thing that the listeners probably don't know if they haven't seen it in this film, when the characters have flashbacks, they don't have their younger selves play themselves when they were younger. They actually have the old veterans actors. So the same actor plays them, whether they're old or young.
Changed 50 years before.
Which I think is brilliant, right?
I think it's a great choice. I think I really enjoyed that part of it.
And they probably could have done something like that with some of these lessons, like even the addicts, right?
Exactly.
Christmas and addicts, they could have shot a scene in Boston at the Boston Massacre that kicked off the revolution, right? They could have done that.
Exactly. Look, I now know who Milton Olive is. I now know the sacrifice he made. I now know he was a young black man. I now know he was awarded the Medal of Honor. He is a part of black history. He is a part of black contribution to the Vietnam War.
And you can link it to the foreshadowing of an event that happens later on in the film.
Right. But I just wish I didn't know so abruptly. You know what I mean? I wish that it was smoothly transitioned. Maybe that's the point. Because guess what? If Spike Lee's purpose was for me to know about Milton Olive, mission accomplished. I know about him now. You know what I mean? And maybe that was the point.
And because you're uncomfortable, man, you're not going to forget Milton Olive for a while.
Exactly. And maybe this is it. Maybe this is him saying, you know what? You're not going to get it suddenly because you're dumb. So here we go. I'm going to put it right in your face. And here's a picture of him. I'm not going to dress it up. Here is a picture of him that you will find on Wikipedia.
Young 18-year-old boy who died jumping on a grenade for a war he didn't want.
And notice he's black. Okay, now let's move on with the story. So maybe you're right, mate. Maybe you're right. Now, what is fascinating about this movie? I can't remember. So what is fascinating about this movie is the numbers, right? And if you go to Time Magazine, writes a great article about Defy Bloods, and they talk about how important this movie is to understand the context of the black plight through the Vietnam War. And I didn't know this, right? That of the black soldiers made up 16.3% of those that were drafted. They made up 23% of Vietnam combat troops, but they make up 11% of the civilian population.
Over double their representative figures.
Yeah, it's just a huge, huge overrepresentation of blacks in the Vietnam War, which is shocking to me because guess what? Every Vietnam War movie I've seen, there's been like one and then maybe two. You know what I mean?
But in every squad you see, a quarter of them should be African American.
Yes. Yes. So, he's making this point that they are not being represented. Vietnam has been sort of hijacked by, it's been whitewashed, if you will. This is the kind of point that he was making in the movie. And, how he did it, I didn't enjoy the story, but I learned a hell of a lot about it. Okay.
Those numbers are
shocking, right? It's like proper shocking. It's like proper shocking.
Like in Australia, the indigenous population is about 2.5% of our population, but they have quite a significant representation rate of incarceration. Now, it's not because there are more criminals in the indigenous community. There's lots of cultural issues that mean they're getting locked up, right? It's the same sort of thing. Like you cannot look at this and say, "Oh, it's just a coincidence." Like, there's something going on here.
Something's going on. No, that's the point. That's the point. That's the point. Right? There's something going on here, and you know who doesn't know what's going on? Mick Cook. You know who doesn't know what's going on? This guy. We don't know what's going on, but something is going on.
No one knows it, right? Like every Vietnam film we've watched is whitewashed.
And I think this is what's causing a lot of the angst around Black Lives Matter, because there's a lot of angst around it. We're saying that this is odd. Okay, we're just saying that this is odd. Something is not right here. Something is odd. And then there's people that are trying to explain and trying to give an answer for it. We don't want answers to it.
No,
right?
We don't.
I just want people to go. You know, you're right. This is odd. So something is not right. Something was not right when this happened.
Yep.
Don't try to tell me what that was, because we're not here to solutionize things. We want people to start to sympathize and understand that something is not right. Exactly.
We had that with the slavery debate in Australia, right? So the American debates kicked off the slavery debate in Australia, and everyone's coming out saying there are no slaves in Australia, right? So for those people that don't know, Australia started as a penal colony. We literally started as a nation of slaves. There were free settlers as well, but we had indentured servitude in prisoners. Got it. They were white, European, British men and women. But there was also slavery in of the indigenous population in cattle ranches and things like that, right? Documented cases. So then, images started surfacing online, and people who'd never seen them, never understood the context, then start getting involved in debate. They're like, it's like, No, if you're like me and Rich and you don't have an understanding or a context about this, this is not your time to comment. This is your time to listen.
Yeah, absolutely. You can have an opinion. You can have an idea. You can have a concept, but you don't know. You know what I mean? The problem is bigger than you. Don't be narcissistic. This is not about
you. It's not about you. It's
this
not
is about a bigger problem. So just so everyone's entitled to opinion. Couldn't agree more. But your opinion is not going to solve anything. Okay. Anyway, I don't want to get too emotive about it, but you hit the nail on the head, mate. It's just about opening eyes and just acknowledging that something is not right. And I think when you look at the numbers, percentages, you know, and you just acknowledge something's not right, that's the start of the
conversation. I mean, yeah, you've got it there in the show notes, mate. There was a surge. McNamara's plan. There was a surge.
Yeah.
And where did that surge come from? You know, a specific proportion. I'll tell you what, who didn't go? Current president of the United States, because he's got bone spurs.
Yeah.
Had to get anyway, Trump. Vietnam, right, if back Vietnam, to this movie. Had to get Trump in.
Back to this movie. So I'm going to talk about what I didn't like about this movie, and then I'm going to talk about what I did like at this movie. So I'm going to finish on a positive. All right. So as we said, mate, I think this movie holistically tried to do too much, which took away from the enjoyment. Okay.
Yeah. They too smart.
They had the Black Lives Matter perspective, the thing that I wanted to see the most. Okay. They had the heist movie, the gold, the squad leader, the thing that I didn't care about the most. And to be frank, the thing that I don't think Spike Lee cared about either, because the attention, the level of detail, like the predictability of what happened, it was almost amateurish. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm going to do this. The landmines.
Yeah. Right. And then there was montages to classic Vietnam films. There's a lot of montages to Apocalypse Now. They went to the Apocalypse Now bar in Vietnam, which I've been to. It's a great place. There was going down the river, all that sorts of stuff. But when you try to do all three of these things, when you do all three of these things, very, very confused. That is what I did not like about it. Right. And, but that doesn't mean I hated the movie. That doesn't mean it's a terrible movie, but it was just very confused. Listen to the end and we'll tell you what we think. The movie was too long, in my humble opinion.
It was too long.
Okay. You can have long movies. Avengers movies, very, very long, but they do it well, rightio. Tarantino movies, very, very long. Borderline too long, in my opinion, rightio. But he does it well.
Because he keeps you tense the entire time.
Yes, but if it's too long, if it's too long because you're trying to make three separate movies that are kind of stitched together, I think it's too long. I was bored at parts. I was just like, come on, at parts. And I remember I looked at my wife many, many times. And I was just like, what the hell is happening? You know, like literally like...
I paused and went for a cup of tea twice.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you guys still going?
What the hell is happening?
Yeah.
Okay, the last thing I didn't like were the war scenes, the action scenes, the fighting scenes, terrible. I don't want to say terrible, but they were terrible. Okay.
Got me about the war scenes, right? Like they talk about one of the characters who's the soldiers, right? He's the only one that actually does anything like kind of realistic in the fighting scenes. And I can't tell if that's realistic or it's because they use the old actors in the fighting scenes and some of those guys just aren't that nimble.
So the fighting scenes were terrible. Okay.
I mean, the Vietnam ones where the helicopter the sat there and just took the RPGs tail rotor and
and landed and all that. They were just terrible, right? Now, and here's the thing. If you want to make a war movie nowadays and you want to do fighting, okay, the fighting needs to be a few things. It needs to be big and amazing. It needs to be the vast majority of your budget. Think the huge Apocalypse Now, platoons. It needs to be big if you want to do it nowadays, okay? Because there's so much war movies out there that you need to define yourself as we are the big one. Not all of them have to be big, right? And the example I gave before, oh my God, I've gone blank. What's the movie we just reviewed? No, the Australian
1917.
One. No, the Australian one. Danger Close, God. Danger Close. Not a huge budget, but you know what?
The guy who made the documentary on Long Tan, he commented on our comments. So thanks, mate. Anyway.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Cool. So Danger Close, not a huge budget, but they did their fighting scenes from a different perspective. And the example I give is they use extra specialists. You're welcome. Calling the artillery and then tracking that message to the CP, CP to the line firing, and then seeing the... Right. So that was awesome because it was a different way of seeing fighting. Right. But this wasn't. This was just old men.
I thought he was
rivals.
Going to like the 80s version of a Vietnam film. Do you not think
it was deliberate? No, I don't know. I don't
know. I thought he was trying to literally take the piss out of the way they do the fighting scenes.
No.
Like, there's so much like platoon in there.
It was just boring.
Even casualties of war type stuff. Like
they were just the fighting parts were the parts that were too long for me. I'm like, you guys, it's just a bunch of old guys shooting from the hip. I did not enjoy the fighting scenes. And they didn't add anything to the movie. They didn't add anything to the movie whatsoever for me, right? So that's addressing the elephant in the room. Right. What I did like about the movie, and there's lots to like that
Indian
I did like about it.
Because I'd be Indian, I reckon.
Asian
elephants.
A very different perspective to a normal war movie. And I really liked the concept of this is us going back to where we were in a war. You know what I mean? We were here young doing this.
Same actors
going backwards and forwards. I really like that. I really like how they went to Vietnam. They went to McDonald's in Vietnam. They're like, oh my God, there's a McDonald's here and we lost the war. Like, you know, things like that. I'm like, okay, I'm seeing war that happened in the past and I'm seeing how the war affects the current and I'm seeing the same characters transcend both of those time periods. I'm happy. I like looking at a war movie from this different perspective. Great. Rightio. And I liked how it was a realistic snapshot of a war movie. Okay. So most war movies you don't get the actual footage and so much of the actual footage. This one, there was no doubt whatsoever that you got a snapshot of Vietnam. Because here's the thing, when you're watching a movie, you're seeing the story, you're seeing this unfold, you're seeing that unfold. Spike Lee was doing, I think, something very different here. He's showing you the Vietnam War. You know, it's not about the story. It's not about the gold. It's not about the men. It's about this war and the black person's plight through this war. And I thought that was a very different and good perspective of this as a war movie.
Talk about the politics, I don't think.
Not the politics of fighting.
In terms of the politics of why the war's fought and stuff, it's very, very limited, I suppose, in the way that it's done. It's done the individual soldier level rather than the... You know, every other Vietnam War tries to contextualize why not.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for some reason, American audiences can't understand how a country can fight itself. I don't know why.
Yeah. No, because they've never had a civil war there. That's why.
Yeah.
Okay. So, look, I'm going to summarize what I think about the movie, and then I'm going to ask you, okay? Because if I do you first, you will read my take on my points. All right. So, bear with me, okay? This movie, in summary... Here's my opinion. I did not like this movie. All right. I did not like this movie at all. All right. I had to apologize to my wife after watching this movie because she was quite traumatized from the graphic footage of the movie. She didn't agree to it. And I had to apologize and I had to say, I'm really sorry. And you had to watch that movie. And I can guarantee you, I will never watch this movie again. And I wouldn't recommend this as a war movie for other people to watch. I wouldn't say, hey, you want a casual flick to learn about Vietnam War or to understand a story, watch this movie. I would not do that. But here's the important point. After all of that I've just said, I do not consider this as a bad movie. I don't think that those points make this a bad movie. I think what Spike Lee was trying to do was use the prism of war to show us the unspoken plight of the black community in and beyond the Vietnam War. And you know what? If he was trying to get me to try to begin to understand, not understand, but try to begin to understand this black person's perspective of the Vietnam War, then absolutely, Spike Lee, I know you're listening to this, mission accomplished. Because I cannot...
tag him in the promo.
I cannot stop thinking about this movie. I cannot stop thinking about this movie. I can't stop thinking about why there was a disproportionate numbers of black men sent to Vietnam compared to white, compared to the population percentage. I can't stop thinking about how the blacks would have reacted to hearing about Martin Luther King's death in Vietnam, of which there was much turmoil as a result.
They heard about it in Vietnam. He didn't die in Vietnam.
Yeah, they heard about it in Vietnam, his assassination. I can't stop thinking about a community of people who feel that they currently are at war with their country, in their country during what we would talk about as peacetime, not only in Vietnam, not only today, but for the entire time period that is from then to now, you know, half a decade. I can't stop thinking about all of that. So in many ways, this movie was incredible. This movie was exceptionally good. But was this movie a source of entertainment? No, 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 no. I literally typed. No, 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 no. Okay. I'm going to give it my rating and then I'm going to ask you, Mick. So as I do with these movie ratings, there's four metrics that I use, right? I'll go through them and give you my rating right now. When I watch a movie, I want a good story. Did this movie have a good story? Not at all. When I watch a movie, I want to feel part of that story. Was I part of this story? No. And when I watch a movie, I want it to be historically accurate. Was this movie historically accurate? Whilst it did show historical footage, it was not a historically accurate film. This story never happened. Five guys didn't go back to steal gold, right? So that's a no as well.
We don't know that.
Right? But...
we don't know that.
The last
they
question...
they could have, man.
The last question...
they're going to tell you.
The last question. Will I remember it? Absolutely. I will never forget having watched this movie. If Platoon...
oh, yeah. Right?
So if the movie Platoon was about the plight of an infantry soldier, if the movie Apocalypse Now was about this descent into madness that was based on that book that we had to read at uni, if Full Metal Jacket... Heart of Darkness. If Full Metal Jacket was about seeing the Joker from civilian go through training, then see his development through to become a soldier that eventually kills in war, then this movie is about war from a black perspective. It's not about one person. It's not about a journey. It's not about this. It's about war. And maybe the fact that I don't understand the movie, maybe that is the very reason that this is actually a really, really good movie. But I didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy it at all, but I'm really glad I watched it, but I'll never watch it again. I feel like I'm bipolar, like saying things like that, but that's how I feel about it. All right.
Yeah, Nick, mate, I'm just
how say you?
Our listeners.
How say you?
Sorry, mate. So one thing what we haven't given, this film needs a trigger warning as well.
And then some.
So
and then
trigger
some.
Warning. Absolutely. So trigger warning, it deals with issues of PTSD. As someone who's a PTSD sufferer myself, I did get a call from Richie telling me how bad the movie was. He didn't give me a trigger warning, so bad drills, Richie. Don't worry, I'm okay, man. But no, seriously, if you are someone who suffers from psychological issues related to war, stress, operational stress, adjustment disorder, you know, operational anxiety or PTSD, you probably need to think whether or not you need to watch this film. I was fine watching it, but there are people I know that would not be fine watching it because it does go into a deep dive into one of the veterans has, you know, bad PTSD. They all have PTSD in some way, but one of them has bad PTSD. He has survivor guilt, has, you know, turns out, I won't do a spoiler, he has guilt for another reason. So, you know, if that's, That part of it, the reason I didn't find that hard to watch as someone who's been through, you know, part of that type of journey was it was done poorly.
Yeah.
It was done so cliche that it basically took all the Vietnam PTSD films you've seen where it's a white guy and then put it over an African-American stereotype.
Yep.
And just... yep. And I don't know if that was the idea to say, hey, we've got them just like you do. You know, you need to understand the veterans of Vietnam are diverse, but it just didn't do it for me. So that was a bit of a weird one because that was a plot line that didn't necessarily need to occur.
No,
I couldn't
decide
what
the movie at all
was. And I said to Josh just then, he said, you know, on YouTube, is this kind of like... less Tropic Thunder, but more Three Kings is set in Vietnam. And I said, no, it's kind of like a documentary with the Three Kings plot thrown in the middle for no reason. Except Marky Mark, you know, I know what Richie's mum thinks of Marky Mark as an actor. So you know, I have to say hi to that. She will know what I'm talking about when she listens to this tomorrow. But it's his facial expression she doesn't like from memory. The problem with this film is it achieves so much and it also achieves so little. That's a good fence-sitting way to put it. But I learned so much about it. There are things in it that I'm like, man, I've got to Google that again. Or, man, I totally forgot about that. Or things that I'm like, wow, that's like really upsetting. I had no idea about that. And, you know, as Richie and I have probably said 1,000 times, there's so much of a cultural context that we are missing and not understanding in this film. So we were talking about this before we recorded the show, Richie. I don't know if the film was made for guys like us. was made for the African-American community, or if it was made for the African-American community to explain things to guys like us.
I don't know.
It's just, it was hard. But the problem was, this is a really powerful film in the themes it explores, and it does a lot of it, like, poorly, cinematographically and plotline.
And I fear a lot of those themes are going to be missed because of the poor plot line. I think that's what's going
to
happen.
People aren't going to watch it expecting to review it on a podcast the next night, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, so, mate, it's tough. I mean, I don't rate it too highly, this one. Like, my score's probably, have you told everyone what you give it yet?
No, not yet. So look,
I'm just going to tell them yours. You go your score, because I normally steal your score. I give it 2 out of 5.
So, look, Defy Bloods is currently rated 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb. It's got 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, let's break that down. The critics have given it 92%, but the audience has given it 54%. Now, what happens on Rotten Tomatoes when this occurs? Exactly what we're talking about. The critics who are looking for, what is this meaning? What is this movie trying to do? What is it trying to explore? What is it trying to get at? They're going to love this movie. And you know what? Within that perspective, I love it as well. Okay. But the audience who's not watching it for those things, not all of them, they're watching it to be entertained. They're not rating this movie very highly.
This is not a Netflix and chill movie either.
No, it's just not a Netflix.
You will not get the chill.
There'll be no chilling. And as Mick ruined, look, my score is 2 out of 5. My score is 2 out of 5. As I said, I will never watch this movie again. I did not enjoy watching this movie whatsoever, but I will never forget the fact that I've seen this movie, and I've learned a whole bunch about not only the Vietnam War, not only history, but what's happening right now as a result of watching this movie. So that's why I've given it 2 out of 5.
I gave it 2 out of 5 as well, as you know. She copied it.
Right. Did you really? No, did you really give it 2 out of 5, or are you just copying my score?
Well, now you're going to break the illusion that people think that I'm first. mate, look, 2 out of 5 is the most generous I'll give it. And you know what? I would, you know, there are some bits in it that I like that you probably didn't. But 2 out of 5. Yeah, you know, some of the clumsy foreshadowing and stuff, like
yeah.
You learn the story of Milton, and then you see a grenade later on in the film. You're like,
he's going to jump on it. That's going to happen. Yep.
And actually, he's the only guy I wanted to live.
Yeah. It's. Anyway, all right. So
this film I won't watch again. I will not recommend someone watch it for enjoyment. I may recommend someone watch it, particularly if they are a-hole about. Yeah. Race issues. I'll say, you should watch this great war film. And then I'm just going to trick them into being educated on stuff that they probably don't have any perspective on, just like I didn't.
But you know what? Here's the problem, man. They're not going to watch all of it. And that's the problem with the movie. If you don't want to finish it, there's nothing in there that's going to keep you going. And I think that's the crux of the problem.
Yeah.
All right.
Homage to Malcolm X too, like the son when he's in the classroom as a teacher. Very Malcolm X-y vibe.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, there you have it. That is our review of this movie, Da 5 Bloods. And I thoroughly, thoroughly am so happy that we
tackled this. So enjoyed it.
I'm really happy we tackled this, because I was really nervous. I brought it up with you weeks ago.
When you brought it up a couple of weeks
ago. I was like, hey, man, we should try this movie. And
I guess know that I knew about it before Wednesday.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about it, though.
But you did, because you're like, what are we doing this week? I was like, oh God, he's such an idiot. But I'm glad we gave it a go. And I hope people like our perspective on it.
People should watch it, because it, you know, particularly the people who listen to this show.
Mum, don't watch it.
Oh, yeah, Richie's mum, don't watch it. I forget that your family listen to this show. Yeah, mate, my family's on this show and they don't listen to it. But yeah, I think... Yeah, if you really want to educate yourself, it's worth watching. Apart from that, like, it's not a Netflix and chill. It's not a good night. It's not a good Friday or Saturday night film.
No. All right. Well, we hope you have enjoyed our episode on this movie review, Defy Bloods. If you have, or if you have comments, or you just want to join the conversation, or you want to push back on some of the things that we had to say, which we are all for, because we love exploring different ideas, let us know. Let us know on our socials. Let us know in the YouTube. Let us know wherever you are. But most importantly, spread the word, get the conversation going, expand your minds.
Yeah, feel free to attack me on Twitter again.
Yeah, feel free to attack him so he can script his reply in an abrasive way, which he fakes. Speaking of scripting, Mick, tell us about some social medias.
Yeah, cool. Just before I get to that, I want to do some other plugging for the other show, right? So that's the wrong event. Anyway, this week, the Dead Prussian community, TDP community, the social network, we're doing on Sunday night at 9 p.m. Australian time. We are doing a craft discussion on Writing Well by William Zinser. I know Richie's read the book.
Oh, I love that book. I love it. I know it sounds straightforward, but it is the most well-written book you'll read. You know what I mean? Yep. It's so good.
It is. It's so good. It does make sense, but it does.
It's weird, right?
The show notes. Feel free to jump. With the TDP community, you can join. You can do a test hour on the social network. Test day. An hour would be rubbish. But you can sign up for a day without any charges or anything like that. So jump on, sign up, see if you like it. We jump on there. I know Josh is a member. He's working through some great writing at the moment. So jump on, join our writers group, and we'll talk about William Zinser's book on Sunday night at 9 p.m. I've got nothing to do on weekend nights, as you've probably guessed. Our socials. Richie, let's talk about our socials. So if you want to pat Richie on the back and just tell him how much of a nice guy he is, you can go to @Richie_TTT. If you want to come at me, once you meet me outside, @Mick_Cook, which is my Twitter account, where people accuse me of being fake abrasive. I'm just abrasive. I'm not fabrasive. And also follow our account @War4Idiots. It's @War4Idiots, and we will put up some links up there throughout the week, pointing you to either the great sponsors we have on the show, also all of our podcast links. Because if you've watched the show or you listen to it once, find a different platform, download it again, give it to your mum. And then go to Facebook and search for War for Idiots. Jump on there and like us, share our stuff, spread the word. What we're trying to do is, talk about some serious issues with a little bit of humor injected to make sure that we can all discuss these as adults acting like children sometimes. And also our YouTube. I know not everyone watches the show. If you do get to watch the show, you will understand all the jokes about beards. You'll understand what we mean when we're talking about belt buckles very poorly, but you'll be able to see what we mean. So feel free to subscribe to us on YouTube. It's been great to see the engagement we get, and we love the people who chat to us during the show. So thanks to the guys, particularly Josh and John, who've been engaging with us. Review movies are really hard. Review episodes, wouldn't you say, Rich? Really hard to get the engagement going because there's no meaty theory to discuss with. So it's great to see people, particularly this one. So thanks for chatting. That's all our socials, Rich.
Well, until next time.
Everyone check out Richie's, I just wanted to interrupt him. Check out Richie's new show, Behind the Black Belt. He doesn't plug it enough, so I'm just going to keep plugging it for him.
Yeah,
Behind the Black Belt. It's Richie going through the life stories of those people that have achieved excellence in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is a black belt. It takes years and years and years to get fascinating stories. Love it. And make sure you comment on their Facebook, YouTube, Twitter about how good the graphic design is on that show. All right, Richie.
Yeah. And you get to hear that sweet, sweet voice that introduces this show too. Okay. Well, until next time, ladies and gents, this is Rich.
And this is Mick.
And this is Rich. And remember that we may be idiots.
But so is Rich.
Yes.
War for Idiots is a TDP production. All opinions expressed by individuals on the podcast are those of the individual and not necessarily representative of any other organisation. The music used during War for Idiots is Fireworks by Jazzar and is used under an Attribution Share Alike 3.0 international licence.